Session number 8185.
Major Verskoyle, Reel 3. Did you know why you'd been the battalion was in
Well, we knew
Ukraine?
that the Allies had sent a small force to assist the Serbs, of which we would form part.
And that was as far as you knew
Yes.
about the events. Following this rather unpleasant first day, what happened then?
Well, we were there for about 3 weeks in camp. Of course, the weather did eventually clear up, and we did a certain amount of training. And then we entrained for the front on the 8th of November.
What sort of train were you put on?
I think quite a reasonable sort of passenger train, as far as I remember. Very slow, of course, like all the railways that part. It took us some time to get up to the front, to a place called Gevgele, which is right on the Greek-Serbian border.
What sort of country was
That's all very mountainous, really. Once you get out of, away from Salonika some way. We took up a line by Lake Doiron, sort of reserve line. No great work was done on it. And then after we'd been there a few days, we moved up across a ridge, a fairly high ridge in front of us, to cross these, almost onto the Bulgarian border, a place called Memishli, where we were when the great blizzard of November the 27th struck. That's the blizzard that did so much damage in Gallipoli. We got the full force of it. We were about, I suppose, nearly 3,000 feet up where we were, so we got the blizzard in properly.
Could you describe the effects of that blizzard?
Well, we were very fortunate because we'd been issued at Mudros with surge, whereas the unfortunate Connaught Rangers, and I think most of the 29th Brigade, were still in drill, and they were even higher up than we were. They were way up on our left flank, and they had an enormous number of cases of frostbite. They were absolutely unprotected against the weather. We were better off, as I say. We had surge, and we had a village. We managed to find accommodation for certain numbers of troops, but it was jolly cold. I remember one used to come in after doing the rounds, take one's great coat off, and you didn't hang it up, you just stood it on the floor and remained standing there.
Were hostilities really practical in this sort of...
Not in that weather, no. The Bulgars were on the opposite side of a deep ravine, higher than overlooking us, but they were just as cold as we were. We used to see great bonfires going every night, keeping themselves warm, as we did too. No, there was no hostilities at all at that moment.
Do you remember the name of the ridge you were on at this time?
Well, this is Memishli.
I believe at one point you rather impromptu tried some red chilies. Can you tell me that
story?
Oh,
that's before we got... I had a wicked platoon sergeant, well, I say wicked, with a wicked sense of fun, and he produced a lovely dish of... He managed to get hold of some goat or something, and he offered it to me with some chilies and said, "You try these, sir, they're very good." So I hadn't encountered chilies in the raw before, as you might say, and I nearly burnt my whole inside out. And that's a great joke. That again is an Irish reference. It hardly happened in English.
You were on a fairly steep mountain ridge.
Yes.
What were the paths like to get you up?
Very bad. Now, how our valiant quartermaster got rations up to us, I've never been able to discover, because they were just single tracks, mule tracks, and very icy after the blizzard. And he must have had an awful time getting rations up, but he always did.
Were the paths above drops, or
hmm?
Was it sort of winding up the side of a mountain? Or?
Oh no, there was no danger of falling over precipices or anything. It was just a very steep path up, and very rough and very icy.
This period in the line, there wasn't much activity, hostile activity, fighting.
No,
anymore.
Nothing happened until the Bulgars developed their attack, I think, on December 8th, when they suddenly decided they'd push us out. And they advanced in considerable strength. My company was ordered to make a counterattack, but fortunately for myself, the order was countermanded because they were far too numerous for one company to do anything about. So then we beat a retreat, back down the ravine behind us, and up again the other side onto the Pazzali Ridge. And that was at night, and it's the one occasion to which I remember the rear, instead of saying, oh, go slow in front, saying, can't you get a move on? And the other side of the ravine, the Bulgars advanced down with all their bugles blowing and everything. It was actually quite dramatic.
So, how close behind you were they?
Well, a good half mile, I suppose. And we got back, and then we got through the 22nd Division, who were holding the Pazzali Ridge. We withdrew right down. And the Bulgars didn't come on any further at the moment, I think. And of course, they never attempted to cross the Greek frontier.
Were you under fire as you retired?
No. No, it was at night, and they wouldn't have seen anything.
You were replaced by... You went through the 22nd Division.
Yes.
Were you then pulled back to Salonika?
We went back to Lake Doiron, where we'd sort of started from in the front. And then we eventually marched back to Salonika. It took us nearly a week because of very bad going. There was a track for a bit, but after that it was nothing but marshes and ploughed fields. And if we made 6 miles in a day, it was as much as we could do. It took us a good week to get back to Salonika.
Did this exhaust the battalion? It sounds very hard going. Was it very tired?
Hmm?
Did it exhaust the battalion, this march? It sounds
well, I think it rather did, yes. Because we'd had a pretty tough time up in the Rhine with the blizzard, and we weren't in the very best of fettle.
Did you meet any of the local civilian population at any of this during this advance?
Oh, we saw a certain number of refugees. They were streaming past us a lot of the time.
But you had no real contact
with
civilians? So where were you placed in camp at Salonika?
Well, we had a temporary halt just outside Salonika to recover our breath, so to speak. And then we moved up to a very pleasant site, Hortiak, which is Mount Hortiak is a few miles outside Salonika. It's about 3,000 feet high or so. We moved up onto a village on its flanks where we found a camp pitched for us, which was very nice, tented camp. Snowing, it wasn't very hot. But we did manage to have a very good Christmas dinner.
Could you describe that?
Yes, I had a fellow platoon commander for whom a parcel arrived adventitiously just the day before. And we had everything, I think, except toast. We had plum pudding and all sorts of things. I can't remember much more about it than that. And then, having got established, as I say, at Hortiak, we spent the next 3 months making roads.
What was the procedure for road building then? Can you describe?
Well, of course, we had sappers in charge of operations, and we just supplied the donkey labour. We got quite good at it eventually. And what I was very pleased about was I went back on a cruise tour about, 15 years ago or so, visiting Salonika, and went up to Hortiak, and was delighted to find that my old road still existed. It was looking rather worse for wear, but still I could recognise it all right.
Were they proper metal tarmac
roads? Oh, yeah, not tarmac, no. Metal road, that's water macadam, as you might say. Oh, no, there's no such thing as tarmac.
And your role in this period would be just to sort of...
Supervise. As I say, we got quite good at it.
During this period, you mentioned that your friend had a parcel from home. Were you getting regular?
Oh, yes, after that, mail was coming in pretty regularly.
And I
don't think we ever had any complaint. Well, sometimes would be quite a gap, but then you'd get an enormous mail in to compensate for it.
Did you get a lot of food parcels?
Oh, yes, quite a number, yes.
During the period, what sort of rations were you on?
They were on normal fresh meat rations. We weren't on the bully or anything awful like that. A certain amount of bread. I think we got quite a good bit of bread, occasionally just biscuit.
And water?
Oh, no trouble about water, plenty of water.
So the food and water supply side was much better than at Gallipoli?
Oh, yes.
From the Hortiak camp, what was the battalion's next move?
Well, as I say, we spent about three months there. And then we moved down to a reserve line in the Salonika defences, about 10 miles outside Salonika, a sort of pass through which the main road goes. We went down to that for a bit and improved it and did some more road making. Very hot down there, incidentally. And then we moved up in July towards the Struma by degrees, camping, stopping in various halts on the way for some few days perhaps, and eventually got down to the River Struma on August the 7th.
This is 1917.
No, I beg your pardon, on August the 26th. Where we were engaged in constructing defences to the front line.
This is 1916.
16, yes.
I believe that on the Struma plain there was a lot of problem with malaria.
Oh,
can
a lot
you
of
describe
problems.
The nature of this problem?
Fearful. I think it had the reputation of being the most malarial district in Europe. Masses of mosquitoes, of course, which started about May and went on until the end of September. And when we went, there was no precautions, there was no mosquito netting issued. There was nothing, so the troops just went down like flies. My battalion wasn't particularly badly affected, I don't know why, we were lucky. We lost quite a number, but there were other battalions who were reduced to strength of 50 or 60 within a few days.
Was this malaria of a serious nature when you caught it?
I don't think it was malignant malaria. There may have been some, but this is what I might call more the ordinary type of malaria. It just laid you out. And once, of course, you had it, you were always liable to a recurrence.
Did you remember the symptoms? Do you remember the symptoms?
The usual malarial symptoms, violent shaking and ague and very high temperature. I can't remember when we started a quinine parade. I think we must have started during that summer. Every sundown, everybody paraded and you had a couple of tablespoonfuls of quinine thrust down your throat.
And did this stop?
Well, I suppose it helped it, must have helped it.
You didn't suffer from it yourself,
though? No, I was very lucky. I never got it.
So what were your duties, basic duties in the
We were constructing defences down there, digging trenches, and putting up breastworks and so on, a certain amount of wiring.
This was for a reserve line, was it?
No, this is the front line. But the Volga was over right the other side of the Struma Valley. Is quite wide, you see, it's about 5 or 6 miles wide. We were one side of the Struma, and the Bulgars were well back from the river itself on the other side.
So you weren't under fire?
No.
How long were you on the Struma plain?
Well, altogether, we were there for very nearly a year. In the summer of 1917, they decided it was too malarial altogether to leave troops any longer. We withdrew to the hills behind, just leaving a sort of outpost line down below.
Did the Bulgarians pull back as well,
They were well back. We had a couple of minor actions in September 1916 against more of a sort of reconnaissance in force. It wasn't a serious attack, which my battalion took part, but it was a very minor event. We had a few casualties, but not a great number.
Did you play any role in these at all?
Well, I was in it, yes, as one of the companies.
Can you remember?
Detail for the this attack.
Can you remember anything about them?
As I say, it was really a reconnaissance in force. Nobody quite knew where the Bulgars were, and we did locate them all right and got fired on and a few casualties. Reported back, and then that served as a basis for a genuine attack by another regiment. A week or two later.
This reconnaissance was across the Struma plain, was it?
Yeah.
So, following these sort of reconnaissances, what was the next major event?
I don't think there was any other major event at all. As I say, we stayed there till the next summer, then we withdrew in June 17 up into the hills behind, where we had quite a pleasant camp, and we stayed there until August, when we were withdrawn just after the great fire in Salonika, which destroyed a whole lot of the town.
Did you see the town following?
No, it was out of sight from us, of course, altogether. We were a long way away, some 70 kilometres to be precise. And we didn't see it. I can't remember. We must have gone into the town, I think, while we were down in a base camp waiting transport to Egypt.
Before you moved away, I'd just like to ask you some general questions about Salonika. We've discussed slightly the climate and the country. What was the morale of troops in Salonika? Was there any feeling that you were on a sort of forgotten front, or, and that you weren't really...
Oh, I think there was a general feeling about that. I think we did feel very forgotten.
What in particular did you resent, or was it just a general feeling?
Well, just a sort of general feeling that they were doing nothing in particular. Rather like Sula again, only on a different scale.
So, you were eventually sent away... moved from Salonika and posted to Palestine, but what was you said you were posted to Cairo first, were you?
No. We travelled via Alexandria, and then we went to camp at Ismailia, which is on the canal, where we were very pleasant. Lake Timsa, bang opposite, lovely bathing, very nice camp. Before we moved up to Palestine.
Did you have any leave throughout this period?
Oh, yes, local leave in Cairo.
Can you remember much about it?
I went up to Luxor, I remember, and enjoyed that very much.
Yes, the pyramids and things.
Oh, yes, we went up to the pyramids. I was fortunate because my uncle was in Cairo. He was general manager of the Egyptian State Railways. So he was there showing me around, so to speak.
Did you do any much training while you were at Ismailia?
Not much Ismailia, no. We were only there, you see, for quite a short time. And then we trained up to Rafa on the Palestine border, the Egyptian-Palestine border. There we did a lot of training.
What sort of... Was there any special training for the sort of desert nature of warfare there?
No, not really. We did do... For the first time, we did some actual field firing with artillery supporting our... Imagine the text, which was quite novel to us because we never had done that before.
Had by now the lessons of the warfare you'd been through, the sort of tactical lessons, that they'd been assimilated and learnt then, had they? Did, or were you still forming?
So, everything's been so changed now, you see, with battle drill. Completely altered everything, really.
But at the time, had you changed, did you still rehearse the Russian drop? Sort of Boer war fighting, or had the training changed in character then in
1970? I don't think there'd be much change as far as I can remember.
Had you been on any specialist courses yet by this time?
Oh yes, I must have done grenade course and gas course and machine gun course of all types, done all the things that everybody does.
Did these courses benefit you much? Did
oh,
you?
Yes, one learned a certain amount.
Had you taken any specialist position in the battalion?
No.
Were you appointed company commander by this time? Because I believe you later became one.
I was company commander from the time the battalion rejoined at Mewdras, you see.
And had that made any difference to your role? Because formerly you were just a platoon commander.
Well, it makes a difference between platoon and the company, I suppose. Short answer to that.
Could you describe the extra duties that were involved?
Well, one has a company under one's charge. I don't quite see what you expect me to say about that.
Okay, we'll move on from there. Where were you posted to then next from Rafa?
Well, we stayed at Rafa for a few weeks prior to the great Allenby offensive, which opened at the end of October, attack on the Beersheba-Gaza line.
Could you describe your battalion's role in these attacks?
Yes, but there was an interesting thing when we moved up from Rafa at the beginning of this advance, a sight which I'd never seen before, the whole brigade, four battalions, advancing line of battalions abreast, just absolute flat desert, you see, the whole way. We moved at night. It was a wonderful sight. It was a moonlight night, if I remember rightly. And it was very hot again. We were very short of water while we were waiting for the attack to start. We had only a sort of reserve role to play. The line was broken by another division, the 60th Division. Then we came in, did a small amount of scrapping, but nothing very much. And then we waited while the other divisions in front, they could only supply two divisions about with rations and water. poor horses, of course, had an awful time in the mounted horses. They went for, I believe, over 70 hours without anything to drink at all. We were lucky. We were withdrawn again to near Rafa and stayed there until we started to move up to Palestine in November.
Did you try, was there any way of supplementing your rations at any time in?
Oh yes, oranges. Masses of oranges. Marvellous oranges, a halfpenny each. A chap in my company said he'd eaten 30 in one day, which I thought was pretty good.
And these were very welcome, I presume.
Very welcome indeed.
What were the other rations? You were still on?
Oh, I think we probably had fresh meat most of the time growing up there. I don't think we suffered much from bullet.
Could you take me through the rest of the campaign then and sort of how you were involved?
Well, we followed up, as I say, behind the front troops right up through Palestine to beyond the level of Jerusalem, so to speak, the Jaffa-Jerusalem line, where we were involved in an attack in very mountainous country and where the rain started. And then we were in a bit of trouble because the railway was flooded out. They couldn't get it up by rail. Poor camels, of course, which were the transport dependent, couldn't move through the mud. The poor camels can't stand mud at all. And we were very short for some days. But once again, our noble quartermaster managed to get hold of rations somehow. We got some. We didn't get full rations. And we had this scrap just north of Jerusalem. And we had an awful Christmas day. I remember it poured all day long. And there were no rations came in at all, and there was no mail, and there were no bivouacs, so it was just like out there soaked.
Can you remember this action just after Christmas Day?
I was a support company. I had very little to do, actually. Turks were, of course, in retreat then. They had no equipment practically, they'd lost all their supplies. They put up a remarkably good show for the conditions they were fighting in. It was just a question of slow advance. We eventually got up to a position about 10 miles north of Jerusalem, which was a sort of natural front line because there was a tremendous deep ravine bang in front of us, well over 1,000 feet deep and almost precipitous down. And we did have to do a slight attack to cross that and drive the Turks off the far side. And it was quite a job getting down to the bottom and quite a job getting up the other side.
You were actually involved in this attack?
Yes, I was in that one.
Do you remember much about it?
Not very much, except it was rather unpleasant going down because we were being potted at all the time in full view of the enemy, needless to say. We had very few casualties, actually. And then we got up on the far side and that became a permanent line for some months.
Was this the hill known as K4?
K4 was part of that, yes. Wadi Jib is the great wadi that we had to cross. And K4 was one of the hills on the far side, which we occupied eventually. And there we stayed, more or less, until the division was withdrawn to France in July.
The Palestine fighting, was it very different in character from your two previous experiences?
Well, it was, because you were up against an enemy who really stood no chance, because we were so immensely superior in numbers, in equipment, and in supplies in general.
This was your second experience of fighting the Turks, so the first one had been fairly brief, but did you form an assessment of their qualities?
Well, yes, I thought, as they are well known to be, they're first class in defence. They never had an opportunity, really, of attacking. Absolutely first class in defence.
Did you feel they were honourable opponents?
Oh, yes.
When did you first hear that you were being withdrawn for France?
Oh, I suppose in June 1918. We weren't the first division to go, so another division went before us. And then, it was known some time beforehand for change, instead of at the last moment, that we were going to France. We were relieved by Indian battalions. Each brigade, I think, lost three British battalions and it kept just one British battalion, and the other three were Indian.
Did you know why you were going to France?
Oh, yes. I mean, we knew all about the March the 21st performance.
What was your attitude to going to France? What was the Western Front's reputation
Well, of course, by then, by the time we went, the front had really been broken. The German front, I mean. Was that the great battle was on August the 8th, which was just after we got there.
So you weren't where did your division land in France? Can you remember?
Well, we landed at Taranto in Italy, and had a week's rail journey practically up to where we eventually landed in, I don't know what it was. I suppose that's in the vicinity of Cambrai.
Were you thrown straight into action, or?
No. Oh no, we were much too full of malaria. We had nearly 3 months, fairly heavy training. Get people fit again.
Well, was there also a question of adjusting to the climate, or?
Yes, adjusting to the climate very largely. Generally getting fit.
Were you hoping that the battalion would be ready for action before hostilities finished, or were you rather hoping that it would all be over before you had?
That's a very delicate question. I shouldn't say we were particularly hoping to get into action, but perhaps we were, I don't know. I think as soon as we knew that the German line was broken, we felt we might as well have a go at it.
Did you receive any UK leave at this time? Because as far as I can see...
We had no leave at all, you see, since we went out, except for one or two sort of compassionate cases. But otherwise there'd be no leave, so a fortnight's leave in July, just after we got into France, was very greatly appreciated.
When you got back home into the UK, had things changed, and what was the attitude to the war compared to what you thought it would be?
I have absolutely no impression of that at all. Absolutely none. I couldn't tell you.
You just went back
just
home?
Just took it for granted. I was much too occupied in enjoying life.
So, when you finished your leave, where were you posted to then?
Well, we were back to the battalion.
Were they still doing their acclimatisation training?
Yes, indeed.
And when, in fact, did the battalion finish its acclimatisation?
Not about the end of September, by which time, we were through the Hindenburg Line. And then our first action was on October the 8th. Against the German front line, and the battalion acquitted itself quite well. I unfortunately ran into our own barrage and got a thing in my knee which rather knocked me out.
Can we just have a talk a little more about this action? Was this at Villers-aux-Trois?
Yes, in that's right.
And what was your briefing before the action? Can you remember?
Well, we were to it. Attack and advance as far as possible, to put it broadly.
Were you taking off from established British front line towards an established German front line, or were
No, we weren't. We had a take